I'm Kristen Bengler, and our mission with this podcast is to help you and the people who love you through the shock of diagnosis and treatment.
I'm Eva Shea, and the incredible woman whose story you're about to hear is a nurse practitioner in San Francisco who has dedicated her life to caring for patients more vulnerable than you can imagine.
Her name is Natasha. This is a story about what happens when you have breast cancer, told in real time.
First of all, how are you feeling?
I'm really tired. It's been 2 weeks, and today I had no energy. I'm not waking up refreshed. I think the first week post-surgery, because it was nowhere near the drama that I expected it would be.
Right.
So I felt fine and I was doing great and I had very little pain, but I know from myself that anesthesia can really bring me down. And I think maybe it's that, maybe I'm just tired. I'm not sure, but I kind of had a weepy weekend and was on the phone with my mom for mom therapy. And it was just, I don't know if it's the anesthesia or.
You know, it could be your body. Visually, you're seeing that like you should be better, right?
Yeah. You and I had talked in the days after my surgery that I had this huge dressing that they had put on, like kind of the size of like a sheet of paper. And they said, oh, you can take it off, you know, tonight or tomorrow whenever you're like, it's not really a dressing. We've just put something on there for you to go home with. And I kept it on for, I think, almost a week. Because I was really scared of seeing what they had done. I'd had some conversation with my surgeon immediately post-surgery, but I have no recollection of anything from that at all. And, you know, so finally when I took the dressing down, I was like, oh, that's really actually insignificant. I mean, there's a big scar right under my boob, but they've done such a good job that you actually can't see it just from face on. And then I think what's bothering me more that I actually didn't realize I had an incision there, but is the one under my armpit. And yeah. They've stitched it so beautifully, the plastic surgeon, that I really didn't see it until about 3 or 4 days ago. Partly because it hurts a little bit to raise my arm, so I'm not doing it that much. But that's bothering me a little more now. And just this sort of strange feeling down the side of my arm and under that sort of sensitive skin under my arm down to my elbow. So it's.
Did they take a lymph node? They took the whole lymph node?
They took three, actually. They took the sentinel and then two neighbors.
Okay.
Which I don't know if three is a lot compared to what other people have taken, or I have no idea. Because I think because I only found this second incision, I haven't really been babying that arm, and I think I should have been a little more careful. You know, I had all the instructions, but I mean, not that I was carrying heavy things, but I was just like, oh, it looks like it was a small surgery. I think I'm fine. And today or this morning, I moved over in bed a little bit and I was like, ow, that actually really hurt.
Right. But let me back up just a second, because we talked to you the night before surgery.
Right.
And you were expecting to spend like the whole day there. And so who took you? How was that pre-surgery? And how are you feeling? Did you sleep the night before?
I was ready for it. It felt like this is everything that chemo had been leading up to. But I took an Uber there. And it was a long day, but it was kind of an interesting day. So just before the surgery, what they did was they numbed me up and they took a biopsy needle and they went back into the area and they put these little sort of like magnetic markers in there. It looks like the lead of a pencil, and they put it right next to the other markers that were there. And it took a while and was a little bit, I think they numbed me up with some lidocaine, but it was just. And I always love to watch it on the screen. So I'm watching this needle kind of poking and digging around. And then when that was done, I had a mammogram to check that everything was in the right place. And that felt a little strange to be having a mammogram. And then the worst thing they did was directly into my nipple, they pushed this blue stuff that goes basically follows the lymphatic system and shows the surgeon which is the sentinel lymph node in the cluster. And that was just a very odd thing to, they you just watch them do it. It's like, you're really going to put that needle right into
it. It was a big freaking needle. Am I right?
Yes, it was.
That was the weird needle procedure Eva and I were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. And no numbing, no nothing. It's just like, oh, you know, we're just going to jab this. And there was a little bit of me afterwards. It's like, why couldn't you wait until I was asleep to do this? I didn't understand why I had to be awake and like looking down as they stuck a needle in there. You know, and then I kind of, because I've worked in surgery, I'm always fascinated by all the toys that they've got to play with. So, you know, I lay down. And I think because it was, I was actually going to be intubated, like I was going to be on the breathing tube, they started me with the gas, you know, take a couple of breaths. And obviously I was out within seconds. It was about a 2 and a bit hour surgery, which is longer than I expected. And coming round is always such a weird thing. Like I was fighting it and, but I had no pain when I came around, which was really nice. And they were very careful about nausea. They gave me a lot of anti-nausea medicine. They gave me that little patch that you put behind your ear. It was very thoughtful. And then I do remember my surgeon coming and I couldn't remember what she said, but I'm remembering what I was saying. Like, did you get it all? Did you get it all? And she said, I think she said something like, we did our best. And I said, well, if you didn't, will you go back in and get the rest or something like that? And she's like, no, we don't do that. And in this sort of drowsy state, I'm like, so do I need radiation? She's like, you're just coming out of surgery. Let's talk about that.
Looks like a plan. Come on.
It was great. And then there's that sort of moment when you realize, so I'm trying to text Antonio, who's coming to pick me up. And it was very sweet. They'd given him like sort of updates through the day. And I look back on the text that I sent and they make no sense whatsoever. And anesthesia is so funny because then all of a sudden I realized I'd cleared it and I was actually, it was time, like I was good to go. So then they do that embarrassing thing of pushing you down in a wheelchair into the parking lot and then you sit and wait. And he brought me home and they'd called some medication in that he went to pick up, but I really didn't take very much. I took a couple of ibuprofen. I never really had that much pain. I slept, I think I was home by about 4:30, slept the rest of the day and felt kind of fine the next day, actually. You know, I was so anxious about the surgery and it was really such a, not a big deal as you had predicted.
Well, no,
it's a big deal in one way, but I didn't wake up like, you know, with like bleeding into the bed covers with like hooked on OxyContin. It was like, you know, take an ibuprofen.
Well, and that's the thing is that every surgery is different. When your surgeon gets in there, that's when they make some decisions.
Right.
And so I couldn't tell you to not be afraid, but it was kind of a fancy biopsy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If that, what do they take out? They took out the 3 lymph nodes and then just sort of like a bit of a mess of stuff where the tumor had been.
So you got the pathology report.
I did get the, well, I had been looking for the report and looking for the report, and it actually didn't load into the UCSF my chart, which concerned me.
Sure.
But I had a Zoom meeting with my surgeon, and she came on the screen. She's like, have you seen your pathology? And I was like, no, I haven't. And basically, everything they took out, there was no cancer in any of it. Like the chemo took care of everything. So the lymph nodes were benign, the sort of little bit of tissue where the tumor itself had been was benign, and there was really nothing else concerning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she was great. She looked me like square on. She said, you can now consider yourself cancer-free. And I just started crying. I couldn't.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Because you've spent 8 months. No, I'm sorry. Six months
mm-hmm.
not knowing what you were going to hear, not knowing what was growing, what was shrinking, what was happening in there.
Right.
And so people know from my story how I reacted and how I was feeling during that time. But can you talk about a little bit of that journey in going from, holy shit, I have cancer, mm-hmm. to, holy shit, I don't have any cancer.
I mean, it's one of those strange things, and we talked a little bit about this, that I never really felt that I did have cancer because I never had pain from the tumor. It's hard to explain what I'm trying to say. It was like, I was never really aware of what I was being treated for. Like I knew intellectually, But I didn't start to feel better when I was getting chemo. I actually felt worse. And so that was a surreal moment. Also, knowing that I still have treatment that I'll be going through until March of next year. So it's like, yay, I'm cancer-free, but I have a meeting with radiation oncology, but I'm pretty sure radiation's going to be part of the package. And I have to be on the hormone blockers until March. So it's not that I walked away from the surgery without anything else. You know, and there's a little bit of me is like, the whole thing feels like a dream. Like, did this really just happen? It's like, yes, obviously, I mean, I couldn't be happier that she came on and said cancer-free, but I never really felt like I had cancer in the first place.
I really feel like it's all we can emotionally do to go to those appointments.
Yeah.
And to make the decisions and to do the things we need to do. And I think we think we're processing it, but we're just getting brave enough to go do the things we need to do that are recommended by the professionals.
Yeah. And I think what angers me about breast cancer as a disease, I mean, partly what you're just saying is like, it can be so different for so many people. But I think it can also just be so insidious. It's like it can just be there growing. Like a lot of other cancers, like a stomach cancer or a, you know, there are more symptoms. Like breast cancer doesn't really throw you out many symptoms and to deal with. So in a way, that's why when I look back to January when I was diagnosed, it was like it was just because there was a painless lump under my arm. That's it.
Right.
Like I hadn't lost body weight. I wasn't in pain. There was nothing else than this lump that saved my life. But, you know, I think of other people who, you know, have their disease diagnosed on a mammogram where, you know, it's even less obvious. That must just be so strange and kind of hard to accept and believe. It's like, prove to me that this is cancer.
The other thing that is insidious about it is that yours was not found on a mammogram.
Right. Yeah. I always forget that little bit of, yeah.
And so I'm glad that you got it taken care of. And regardless of how big yours was, if you're cancer-free or whatever, you still are going through this. And those feelings that you're having, there's only a small group of us that have those.
And I'm worrying about recurrence already. And I've only been told for a week that I'm cancer-free. And I'm thinking, well, it's really good that the chemo works so well because when I need it next time, like I've already given myself a recurrence.
It's like there's something sitting on your shoulder.
Yeah.
That you're just like, I want it to go off, but it's never going to get off.
Yeah. I've had a lot of the conversation in my head and, you know, with they didn't get it all. There wasn't any to get. Like when they went in the surgery, there was no cancer there. And so the logical question is, so what on earth are they radiating? But, you know, it's like, I don't want any, oh my God, I should have in 5 years' time. And the chemo concoction that they gave me worked. I have no regrets about the surgery. I'm just going to do as I'm told.
Because if you were going to be starting radiation, it's usually what, 4 to 6 weeks after surgery?
That's my understanding. Yeah. And I don't know why I love this, but my radiation oncologist is also female. So I had a female oncologist, a female surgeon, and now a female radiation oncologist.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
I love that.
Yeah.
When is your radiation appointment?
It is in about 2 weeks.
I'm betting, and you being a nurse, I found it fascinating. I kind of pretended it wasn't happening on me and found it fascinating what they were doing and that there was a physicist that was in there and like, you know, it's all nuclear medicine. It's like kind of cool.
Yeah. It's very nerdy.
It's super nerdy.
It just 6 weeks sounds like such a long time. I mean, six cycles of chemo felt like a long time. But every day for 6 weeks, I can just imagine like being halfway through week two, and just being like, oh my God, how much more of this? And I'm going back to work next week. So I'm going to try and fit it in, hopefully like the end of the work day so I can go to work, then get the therapy and then go home. But
that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted it at the end of my day. So when I was finished, I was finished.
Yeah, me too.
So quick question on that is, mm-hmm. because you work in the hospital, is there a facility where you could go directly there from, you know, where your office is?
So the hospital I work at is the Poor County Hospital, so we don't do radiation there. So I'll be going to the new fancy hospital at Mission Bay, which is where I've had all my treatment.
Okay.
I'm happy to go there. And I also, knowing myself, if mine was first thing in the morning, I would find every excuse not to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they did me at like a 7 a.m., I would miss some. I know that. So it, you know, and I don't have a car. I have a scooter. So it's going to be like scooter and bicycle to get there.
Wow.
Or friends.
Yeah. Well, let people take you too. The thing that kept me going was that, like, it wasn't like I could call in sick for it. They just tacked it onto the end. I had 30 treatments regardless. So I could either get it finished by a certain date or I could just keep tacking it onto the end.
That's good to know. Okay. So you can't escape it. No.
No, it's just going to come later.
Right.
And so radiation is next. You got an all clear.
I did.
You have beautiful hair.
It's starting to grow back in all the places that fell out of. So I've got stubbly legs. It's interesting just to watch. I had no idea how slowly hair grows because I haven't had chemo for, I can't remember. It's been at least 2 months. Yeah.
And my armpit hair has still not grown back much.
Yeah, no, mine hasn't even started to grow back. That's interesting. I'd forgotten about armpit hair. That would be nice if it stayed away.
I know. I'm going to be interested to know if your armpits stop or start stinking. Because I had the case where on the side where it was radiated, I had no odor. And then in the other one, I would take a shower, I would scrub, I would whatever, and I would get out, be brushing my teeth, and I'd be like, you smell like a field worker. Like, what is going on? And, you know, it was ridiculous. And then just in the past couple of months, the stinky arm stopped stinking. And the other arm came back with a vengeance.
The one thing for me that has come back, which is such a joy, slowly, slowly, my sense of taste is coming back. So I'm enjoying eating again. Things have flavor. That's been really, really nice. About bloody time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you get a break at all from your hormone blocker infusions with the surgery?
No.
No?
No, everything's scheduled. Just that happens every 3 weeks. So I guess it's next week. I'm not sure. I can't really keep up.
How has that been going to that? Without the chemo and the DignaCap?
It's a much easier day. It's still a longish day. I think each one is half an hour and then they have to wait for it to come up from pharmacy, you know, and I have to go in earlier for blood work. So it's still a good half a day. Yeah, there's a little bit of the sort of the trauma of like, oh my God, I'm still in this infusion center. So far, touch wood, I have not had any side effects from just getting the hormone blocker. It's been, no, pretty benign. It's actually, you know, ridiculously, it's like it's 3 hours where I just sit and read a book, which is kind of nice.
I am so relieved that you're not having side effects from that because I remember that was what was giving you so much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and dehydrating you and all of that. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I hope she doesn't have to keep going through that. It's like this reminder that like, oh yeah, I'm still doing something that's making me feel sick.
Right.
And then there'll be a point where you'll get to get your port out too, which is going to be, that's going to be fun too.
It's so funny. I've almost forgotten that I have that. Like I went out at the weekend and we almost had some sunshine in San Francisco. So I had a shirt where the port was very obvious. And at one point I was like, oh, am I going to change? And I was like, nah, no, I'm not actually. I almost want somebody to ask me what it's for.
A little badge of honor.
Yeah, and to normalize it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, wait, how were your bras? We talked about bras.
Oh.
How'd that work with a lumpectomy?
So not great because the scar is right under the boob and the bras that I bought, they don't come far down enough. So anybody listening, the ones that they suggested I buy, the Fruit of the Loom, which are kind of soft, nice cotton, they come way too close to that boob fold. So get something that's lower.
So maybe like something that's more like a a bralette or almost like a sports bra, like a soft sports bra, but comes down to the middle of your rib cage.
Yes.
You know, like they have those tops that are like super supportive. Was it a big deal for you to be able to attach it in the front? Did you have any limitations with that, I guess?
No, I didn't. And I've got almost perfect range of motion right from the beginning with my right arm, just because they didn't do that much. I'm still wearing them. They're nice to wear at night. I'm still wearing it at night. But yeah, don't do what I did. Anybody listening? Because it's right on the fold and it's not a great idea.
Yeah. And I mean, and everybody has, for people who have not gone through a lumpectomy, they're in different spots. They go in where the tumor is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fairly common for them to do something with a lymph node, like to check it or something like that. I don't think I've heard of anybody who's had a lumpectomy who hasn't had something out of their armpit where it's either a biopsy or a lymph node taken.
But if you hear that it's going to be under the boob, it's a pretty big incision. I would say it's like 4 or 5 inches. It's almost the length of the boob, but it's right, like you can't see it because the boob folds over it.
So what you're saying is that your range of motion wasn't so bad that you couldn't have slipped over like maybe a sports bra.
Right, exactly.
Well, the last thing I wanted to touch on is that, you know, there's been some emotions. What was going on?
It was strange. It was a lot of why me, you know, coming on the tail of, you know, my husband walking out, you know, why me? Almost like the word cancer just like repeating itself over and over in my head. Just, you have cancer, you have cancer. Even though I'm trying to think if this weekend I had even, I'd had the phone call that said you're cancer free, but I'm still, you know, tripping on this and just, you know, fear and a sense of, I have a great group of friends and meeting you through this, like people to talk through this, but it's lonely. Still.
That's what I was going to mention, is that you and I have the common thread of being single and living alone.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And that feeling of like, there's not that one person that when I'm feeling this way, I can just let it all go.
Yeah.
And sob into his or her sweater.
Yeah, for me, it feels like the safety net has gone, like, you know, losing my marriage and then, you know, what for some people is like the worst thing that can happen. And I feel I've actually got off really lightly with this. I really do. But still, it's like, it's very hard to put words to. I think that's why when I found your podcast, it's like, oh, here's somebody putting words to what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I'm so honored that you reached out and that you trusted me and Eva and have been so vulnerable. There hasn't been a question I've asked that you haven't been willing to answer. So thank you. Thank you for trusting me.
I was thinking earlier today, actually, I'm like, so I'm now cancer free. I didn't want this relationship to have to end just because I don't have cancer anymore.
Oh, it won't. You're stuck with me.
But also I'm like, how interesting is my story now? I'm just getting a hormone blocker and radiation. Like maybe I need to like invent some side effect.
No. But I'm super relieved and happy that you don't have a long story.
Yeah.
And we still have to get together.
Yes, we do.
And for those of you listening, Natasha and I have never met in person. She lives up in the San Francisco Bay Area and I live in San Diego. And you've heard Eva on here periodically and she's in Austin. So through the power of Zoom, we've been able to do this podcast. And I said it was the last question before, but this is more like it's a huge difference between you and I. And it's also, I think, what's extremely intriguing and troubling about your story is from the nursing angle. Mm-hmm. How has this been? And have you been able to let yourself be the patient?
Not entirely. And in some ways, it's been to my advantage. And in some ways, it's been a disadvantage. I've had to be reminded by my providers that I'm their patient. Definitely at the beginning, I think I was very much the nurse taking care of it. I think I've got better as time's gone on, but I'm going to work next week. I'm going back to work, and I work in palliative care with cancer patients. And people are feeling protective of me already. It's like, you know, if it's too much, we can switch you to something else. Or, I mean, it's going to be different. And I don't know if it's going to be, I mean, in some ways, I know it's going to be harder because I'll be, again, talking about cancer all day, but with my own sort of perspective there too. But I hope that it doesn't become all about me. I hope I've been able to process enough that I let patients have their own story as well.
Well, I think that the difference, and it's a huge difference, is empathy versus sympathy. Mm-hmm. Because with empathy, you've been there.
Yeah.
Not exactly where they are, but those feelings and some of those procedures are there or have been there. And so you'll get back to a routine.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's been, I mean, I feel very lucky that I've had the disability time and the finances to take this time off, but it's time for some routine. I do well with routine.
Yeah, I think you'll be surprised like how much different you'll feel.
Yeah.
But can you remind us again what palliative care is and what does it look like when you're having a conversation with someone?
So palliative care is about quality of life, to give it like a broad definition. A lot of people mix it up with hospice, and it's like all hospice is palliative, but not all palliative is hospice. So I do a lot of symptom management. What's great about the hospital is anybody who has like a stage 3 and above is from the oncologist is usually referred to me. And so I will see the patient from when they arrive with all those questions that unfortunately at an early point, we don't have the answers to, but I have the space and the time for people to ask the questions. My new appointments are always an hour, and then follow up. If I think somebody needs an hour, it's going to be an hour. So it's a very interesting work from, you know, there's the purely medical side when it's like, okay, you've got terrible nausea. Let's see what we can do to manage that. And then while we're doing that, you know, just the question of, you know, how are you coping with all this? That a lot of oncologists care, they just unfortunately don't have time to ask because the answer, it's often a really long answer. And then I do a lot of advocacy for patients to make sure their appointments are happening on time, that the things aren't falling between the cracks. The patients who come to San Francisco General are often, it's Medi-Cal, Medicare. So it's poor patients, a lot of, you know, people struggling with financial insecurity, food insecurity, a lot of people with very insecure housing, you know, where they'll say, you know, cancer is the least of my worries. My kids and I are sleeping in the car. So, you know, getting social work to really help, just really giving somebody a space. And I work very closely with a chaplain who is non-denominational and is just great at sort of holding space for people to have their fears of death and dying and what does it mean to them, and just struggles with the why me. Whatever can, you know, improve somebody's quality of life for as long as they have. And we don't know, you know, it could be a stage 4 and 10 years later, you're still around, and I hope so. Or, you know, it could be a really aggressive stage 1 that we can't really control. I also work in the inpatient. If I know any patients who are from my clinic who've been admitted, I'll always go and see them if they get admitted. Or, you know, some patients will come in through the emergency room with like excruciating pain and, oh my God, we've just found that they've got like metastatic bowel cancer and they're going to need your help in clinic because, you know, we're not going to keep them in the hospital. And 4 o'clock, most days when I can get away with it, I take ice cream to people. It's my ice cream rounds.
I love it.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I think having been, having spent 2 weeks in that scary zone where I didn't know what was going on and whether I had a cancer that could be treated, where the cancer was, like having gone through that, I think it makes me more accessible to patients. Not that it's something like, you know, oh, let me tell you about my cancer story, but there's just sort of a deeper understanding of that sort of existential fear.
And I am so happy you're on this other side. You're not done.
No,
you have.
No.
And again, we've talked about before, like you're never done.
Yeah.
But you have such a good team that's going to keep monitoring you.
Yeah. No, they're great. And whether they mean it or not, when I went in for my surgery, the nurse who was doing all the pre-op, and she looked at who my plastic surgeon was and who the surgeon was, and she's like, you've got the dream team. And they may say that for everybody, because I can't imagine them dissing their own staff before somebody goes into surgery. But it was just, it felt great. And I think all surgeons are dream teams. I think they're amazing.
Yeah, the miracles that they work, you know?
Yeah.
I love you, and I'm so proud of you that you're done. And I couldn't be happier that you're cancer-free.
Thank you. You too.
I'll talk to you soon. Hi.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, love. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. To continue telling this story and helping others, we need your help. All podcasts require resources, and we have a team of people who produce it. There's costs involved, and it takes time.
If you believe in what we're doing and have the means to support the show, you can make a one-time donation, or you can set up a recurring donation in any amount through the PayPal link on our website at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com/donate.
To get the key takeaways from each episode, links to anything we've talked about, and promo codes or giveaways from our partners, sign up for our email newsletter.
You'll get notes and thoughts from me related to each episode and links to the most useful resources for all the breast cancer things. So if you have chemo brain, you'll be able to just go read your email, find anything we talked about on the podcast without having to remember it.
The link to sign up is in your show notes and on the newsletter page at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com.
We promise not to annoy you with too many emails.
Thanks for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. If you're facing a breast cancer diagnosis and you want to tell your story on the podcast, send an email to hello@theaxis.io. I'm Eva Shea, your host and executive producer. Production support for the show comes from Mary Ellen Clarkson, and our engineer is Daniel Cruiser. Breast Cancer Stories is a production of The Axis, theaxis.io. Heh